Welcome back, WNSG, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are at Jennings Cafe in Gatonsville, and our time is short because she's got children named Eli and another baby, and we got pickles here.
Business commitments, but we've got a commitment. It's the most important thing. During our break, Dr. Wen said she will.
She didn't mean
back.
It. She
well, now it's really on the record.
Now it's on the record. She will.
I would
come
love
back.
To come back. Thank you,
Dr. Wen. Let's bottom line it. When we ask people, a lot of times when we're having guests on, we'll say to our listeners, we'll say to our friends, what would you ask? And when I asked folks about the public health issue mm-hmm. that you were coming on, they said, mm-hmm. oh, Don, that's easy. Ask her about opioids. Mm-hmm. Ask her about opioids. Ask her about opioids.
Okay.
We know the stats. 130 people die every day. I had to read that two or three times to get my head around. 130 people.
Imagine if 130 people were getting shot every day.
Every day, right?
Like, you know, like that would, I mean, that would be a front page. But when people die of opioids, it's not, it doesn't lead the news.
700,000 deaths from 1999 to 2017. I mean, the number, 70% of overdose deaths related to opioids, you were front and center. Mm-hmm. You were on the battle lines.
Sure.
How do we get this? First of all, talk to us about the magnitude of the crisis and then how we get it turned around.
Well, there's no doubt that the opioid crisis is a public health emergency. It's a public health emergency here in Baltimore, in Maryland, and all across the country.
There's nowhere this isn't affecting in our country, correct?
That's exactly right. Every community is affected.
Where did this come from? I mean, when I was a kid, it was weed, and there was cocaine, and there was crack. And I'm never a part of any of that. But like, where did this come from? Because the last 7 or 8 years, it's become a buzzword, and the Baltimore Lean, and all the things that we don't want to know about that, but exist.
Well, I think there are multiple factors. One is that there's no question that the pharmaceutical industry, which is now being sued, and there are a lot of settlements involved, but there's no doubt that the pharmaceutical industry played a big role in this, because when I was going to medical school, they were pushing these pain pills as the most important thing. I mean, we were talking about pain as the fifth vital sign. And I was trained to take away patients' pain without thinking about the addictive potential of these medications. Mm-hmm. And so doctors also are complicit in this too. Now, there's also illegal trafficking of heroin and other drugs from other countries, fentanyl being an increasing problem. But I think it does need to be said that this is not a new problem. Yes, the numbers are a lot worse than they have been in previous years, and it's been built up over time. But here in Baltimore, people have been dying from overdose, from heroin, from cocaine. Other inner cities have experienced this issue for decades. And I think it does need to be said that this issue has in part gained prominence because of the numbers, but also because now it's white people in suburban and rural areas who are dying, that now people are paying attention.
I was struck by that when you write, again, in your many articles that you write, said that when it was a white problem, it was a substance abuse problem. When it became people of color, it became a crime problem.
That's right. That's right. And we have incarcerated generations of black and brown people for what we are now saying, rightfully, is a disease. And I think it's, you know, in the last 5 years, I have seen the conversation completely shift. I was invited to testify in front of the House of Representatives, I think, back in 2015. And it was still very much divided. I was asked a lot of questions that seemed to question this idea that we in medicine know to be true, that addiction is a disease, that there is treatment available, that we have to focus on prevention, that this is a disease to be treated like any other. But there were a lot of people who questioned that premise at the time. Then I testified again in 2017, 2018, and nobody questioned it at that point. It was all about how do we get resources for the treatment that we need. So I've seen the pendulum completely shift around this issue that there's bipartisan consensus around, which, by the way, Congressman Cummings had a very outsized role to play in driving that conversation. But at the same time, we have to be honest about how we got to where we are. And if we do not identify structural racism as a contributor for how we got here and how this conversation has shifted, then we also will not be honest about getting to the right answer either.
So what I hear you, and again, I do know that we're up against clock because you have other appointments. I hear you really laying out dual paths. There's a long term and there's a short term. The long term are changing these values and perceptions in the country as to how we see it. But short term, I think what folks want to know, you were on the ground, 2014. Yep. People are dying every day Baltimore City.
That's right.
How do you attack it? What do you do to try to make a difference?
We had a three-pronged approach here in Baltimore City that was highly effective and was and is now being replicated across the country, I'm happy to say. So three things. The first is the really short term. If somebody is dying in front of me right now, it's my job to save their life now. Yes, I have to worry about the other factors that were making them sick in the first place and why they were using opioids, but right now, if they're dying, my job as an ER doctor and also as a bystander is to administer naloxone or Narcan, which is the opioid antidote, and save their lives. So we worked with the legislature in 2015 and got the legislation changed so that I issued a blanket prescription, which is the standing order for naloxone, to every single one of our residents in the city. 620,000 people now have access to this medication, naloxone, and we did 39,000 trainings. And within 3 years, everyday residents used naloxone to save the lives of nearly 3,000 family members, friends, relatives, community members in our city.
It's amazing, Doctor, when you ask folks, and Esther, I don't know about you. I know you've had some issues in your family. We all have. But I know that I have family members who have twice been saved by naloxone. It's,
right.
I think when you start asking folks, has naloxone made a difference? And you start talking to people and they open up. It's amazing how many people it's saved someone from dying.
That's right. That's right. And that's our obligation first and foremost, because if we want someone to have a chance at a better tomorrow, we have to save their life today. So the first thing is saving lives from overdose. Second thing is getting them to treatment, because addiction is a chronic disease. Just like if somebody had high blood pressure, heart disease, we would say, yes, if you're dying from a heart attack, we have to save your life
right
now.
Well, let's talk about the treatment a little bit, because it does feel like from the outside, like what would we do with that drug addict? What would we do with that person on the street leaning? If we could bring that person in and save that person before it becomes an emergency room issue, where is that intervention? Where is what is that therapy? What is that? And where are the success stories in that? And that we should be cheering about the people that we did save, the people that 5 years ago that you came in and put a system in that they could stand in front of us and walk down Wilkins Avenue and say, hey, I was one of those people that used to use and now I don't anymore.
Sure. So I'm a doctor and a scientist, and I have to go back to the evidence and what the medical research shows, which is that addiction is a disease and that treatment works. And the treatment that is evidence-based, that's endorsed by major medical organizations, is a combination of medication-assisted treatment, so buprenorphine, methadone, and Vivitrol, also called naltrexone, combined with psychosocial treatment and mental health counseling, combined with other wraparound services, like housing, for example, is a major service that also helps people who are in need as well. That's the
evidence
base. Talk
about that. Why housing?
Housing is healthcare too. Many patients who are coming to the ER or to other places seeking addiction treatment, and they say, I need a bed. We are thinking, oh, they need a bed in some facility to help them recover from the substance use. Many of them are actually just saying, I need a bed. I need a place to sleep in.
Sure.
And potentially they could get outpatient treatment for their illness, which is, again, how we would see any other illness. Not everybody coming in with chest pain needs a hospital bed, but they do need a bed to be in and to get their issue treated too. So I think it's important for us to recognize that treatment works. And Nestor, to your previous question about the success stories, there are so many. I mean, there are millions of people around the country, many of whom are in Baltimore, who are in recovery themselves. And
so maybe we're making more progress than we think. That would be a Baltimore positive premise.
Well, let's see. Let's ask the doctor respond to that. Well, are we making progress?
Very much. Very much.
Okay.
The culture has changed. The treatment landscape in our city and across the country has significantly changed, too. Now we're finally recognizing that we need more treatment. Now, we're still far from getting to the level that we need, but at least we recognize that we need more treatment.
We don't just call these people drug addicts anymore. We say
people with the disease that
need help.
That's right. That's right. They need to be ready for help, and sometimes relapses happen, but they happen for all other illnesses too. And we have to recognize that relapses are part of recovery. Which brings me to the third point, which is first you save people's lives, then you get them into treatment. And then the third thing is we do have to prevent addiction in the first place and also counter the stigma that we see with science, which includes talking about addiction as a disease. And the prevention element includes educating doctors and health professionals, changing that culture. It's also working with law enforcement. And one of the programs that we started in Baltimore is LEAD, Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion, where individuals who are caught with small amounts of drugs for their use or to sell to others, but they're not a major drug dealer, they're selling in order to feed their own habit, that these individuals are offered treatment instead of incarceration. And I think we need a lot more programs like that so that we are switching our mindset from addiction as a criminal justice issue to addiction as a public health issue.
Now in Baltimore County, we had an issue and we tried to address it repeatedly. I know County Executive Ushefsky has a task force now. He's taking a look. We always face this issue of a shortage of beds for treatment on demand.
Sure.
Is that an ongoing issue nationwide?
Yes, absolutely. A Surgeon General's report found that only 1 in 10 people with the disease of addiction are able to get the help that they need, which I would just turn back and say,
wow.
For what other disease would we ever find that to be even remotely acceptable? If only 1 in 10 people who need dialysis can get it? Or, I mean, I see patients coming to the ER all the time who need treatment for addiction, and we tell them, sorry, we don't have beds right now, but come back in 3 weeks. Imagine saying to somebody who had a heart attack, sorry, we can't get you treatment now. If you're not dead in 3 weeks, come back then. We need to get to the point that we see addiction no differently than any other disease. But I think that we are getting there. We've made tremendous progress in the last 5 years. And coming back to what we started the conversation with women's health, we have not nearly changed the culture around women's health basically at all in the last 20, 30 years. So seeing how addiction, there's been this incredible pendulum swing, it gives me a lot of hope.
Well, that's wonderful. You know, I think the last point, and again, you've been vocal, and maybe you could just give us the quick rundown on this, is you've been pretty vocal and outspoken saying, look, let's not make the same mistake with these opioid statements that are taking place now all across the country, different states, different counties. Baltimore County's involved in one. Baltimore City's involved. In 1998, there was this huge tobacco settlement, almost $250 billion that was going to be spent. And as you point out, less than 3% of that money has gone to prevention. It's gone to other things. So what's your message about these settlements that are being signed, being evaluated? What should we be on the lookout for?
I'm glad that drug companies are paying their fair share, or what should be their, hopefully will be their fair share, in causing this epidemic in the first place. But I worry that that money is going to be used for the wrong purpose. And if it is, we're going to end up in the same mess that we are in now. We'll lose our best opportunity to actually counter this epidemic. And I think that we need to be putting the action to where our words are. I mean, every politician on every level is talking about the opioid epidemic because they hear about it in town halls. But I want to see not just, do you see this as a problem, but what resources are you going to focus on? Will you use a public health approach? Will you focus on evidence and science? Will you listen to the doctors and those on the front lines who are addressing the issue every day? Will you target the resources to areas that are the greatest hit, including Baltimore City and the county? I mean, will you actually focus on the areas that need the help the most, or will this money just be squandered like so much has been across our lifetimes?
Nestor, we've just scratched the surface.
I need to talk to her about yoga and like fresh vegetables and processed foods.
And the right temperature, right temperature of water. But here's the good news. We got a commitment. It's on tape. It's on video. Dr. Nguyen will be back. We've scratched the surface of public health, but thank you for your service and everything you're doing to make a difference.
Thank you for yours.
We need more doctors on the program. Dr. Lena Nguyen joining us here. We're at Jennings Cafe. We're in Catonsville. We're back next week. Fade Lee's. And, of course, we're going to be back down at State Fair as well. Find the whole schedule at BaltimorePositive.com. He's Don. I'm Nestor. We are WNST.net, AM 1570 at WNST Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore's positive.